Good afternoon. Welcome to Line One, your health connection on KSKA Anchorage. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. For those of you who may not be familiar with me or my role in Line One, I'd like to take a minute to explain. I'm a licensed clinical social worker specializing in anxiety, depression, and trauma for people ages 9 and up. As for my role on Line One, Dr. Woodard has graciously invited me to host Line One once per month on a mental health or psychosocial topic of relevance to our community. I'm looking forward to continuing our relationship and thank him for the opportunity to participate in this small way. Well, as a parent of three young daughters, today's show is especially relevant. Working with teens every day in my office, I am inundated, and I mean inundated, by stories about kids in high school struggling with self-worth, depression, anxiety, and substance abuse. Cell phones and the conflict they create at school and in homes are also a frequent topic of discussion. Sometimes hundreds of text messages per day, nude images of kids under 18, and cyberbullying are all things I discuss every day. The biggest question I have is, how significant of a threat did these issues pose for our kids? And if it is a problem, what can we do as a community to make positive changes? Joining me today to discuss these topics are South High School nurse Luann Fogles, South High School counselor Sarah Miller, and East High School senior Kelsey Hernandez. We can be reached with your questions or comments in three ways. The local phone number is 550-8433, or you can call toll-free from anywhere you might be listening at 1-888-353-5752. The last way to participate is by emailing your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. You got to spell all that out. I also want to encourage listeners to give us feedback about how the show, or suggest topics for our monthly mental health program. Welcome to the show. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Sarah, what I know about you is that you ski really fast and that you graduated or went to school with my wife for...
Graduated, or I'm a little bit older than she is, yes.
A little bit older.
I won't say how much older.
Not long, because y'all were in school together. So you have the unique perspective here of having gone to school here just before the cell phone craze, right?
Mm-hmm. Just before cell phones.
Just before it. Yeah. I remember... I'm young enough to know of cell phones in high school. My mom had one of those giant bag phones that you carried around. It looked like a, you know, block of ice. So I do remember cell phones in high school. I'm not that old. Can you give us a little bit of your background and what you've been doing with the school district?
Sure. I grew up here and went outside for college to ski and then moved back and went to UAA to get my master's in education and school counseling. And before that, I was working as a tutor with the homeless population in town, the students in town, and realized that we were trying to kind of force feed them curriculum when they were dealing with all these social emotional issues. So that's when I really got interested in counseling, the aspect of education. Went and got my master's, and I've been working as a school counselor for the past 9 years, as well as coaching. So I get a lot of interaction with kids.
Okay. And Luann Fogles, you are a new addition. We had a Anchorage resource officer for people who are had looked up information about the show who was going to come on, but they had a conflict and couldn't make it. So we have the school nurse with us from South High School, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And school nurses see everything, right? Isn't that what they say?
That's right. Whatever walks in the door.
Can you give us a little bit of your background and what you've been doing with the school district?
Well, I've been a school nurse since 1996. Started out in elementary school, went to middle school, then alternative high school, and now I've been at South since it's been open. And in my eyes, school nursing is the best nursing job in the world.
All right. So you've been at how long South been open?
This is its ninth year.
Ninth year. Uh-huh. Okay. And our last member of our panel is Kelsey Hernandez, who is a senior at East High School. Now, you're in the school within a school at East?
Yes, I am.
Can you give us a little explanation of what that means?
School Within a School is an interlearning community that links your freshman and sophomore English and history classes, so that way you can really have a sense of belonging, especially for students who sometimes have a harder transition making it into high school, or for students who are really accelerated in learning. It encompasses everybody and takes in everything.
And you've been there all 4 years?
All 4 years.
All right. Well, Kelsey is here to let us know what's really happening in the schools. I mean, we as adults think we know, and we get a lot of information, but I think it's somewhat filtered. So without getting too specific, Kelsey hopefully will shed some light on some of the stuff that, from the teenager's perspective, somebody's still in school. I guess I'd like to start out with cell phones, because they come up probably more than, I mean, it's sort of supplanted drugs is sort of the number one thing that I get in my office. So cell phones, let's start with the school district policy on cell phones.
Well, basically, the policy is, I think, across the district that students can have phones in high school, before school, at passing, at lunch times, but not during classroom time. That's the rule.
We are not allowed to have them at passing time at our school. If they see you in the hallway with your phone on, maybe they might give you a warning, or they'll just take it away and say, pick it up at student services. At the end of the day, you have to have a parent or legal guardian, though, come get it for you.
Okay, so the cell phone policy is before and after school, during lunch, essentially.
Before and after school. I didn't mean passing, yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I did read on the website that they said during lunch it was acceptable. Is this what's happening? Anybody?
No. Cell phone use is, it's constant. It's definitely a constant thing. I mean, in my school at East, your phone will get taken away. Like, you'll occasionally get a teacher who's in a good mood and be like, hey, I hope you're not texting. I hope you're not on that phone because, man, that bright little lit-up screen in this dark room is not obvious. But if not, it's pick it up at the end of the day at student services. You know, make sure your parent or legal guardian knows they have to come with you.
And it's pretty prolific at South. I would say that kids have their cell phones all the time, even though, you know, most teachers ask you not to have it out at South. You know, each classroom is different. I had a girl come in and do an experiment where she texted her friends during the school day, and half of them responded during class periods just because I was curious how many people actually were sending texts to and from each other during the day. It's quite a lot of them.
You've been doing a little research,
mm-hmm,
have you?
Mm-hmm.
All right. A Pew Internet study done in 2010 indicated that 64% of teens who take their phones to school say they have sent or received a text message during class. 31% who take their phones text in class several times a day. Now, that's certainly not, that's not during, before school and after school and during lunch. So those are pretty big numbers. That means about a third are multiple texting during the day. How are they doing that? I mean,
oh, kids are clever.
Yes,
oh,
they are.
Oh, man. You may have been through it once, but the tricks change all the time. I actually had a teacher one time who was like, I'm tired of looking at this. So for when you have substitutes, if I have to hear another note, this is what you do. And he's like, pull your book over your desk a little bit, like 2-3 inches. You're looking down. It looks like you're reading. I'm tired of hearing this. I'm tired of looking at it. But it also depends on the level of classes you're taking. When you get up into like higher AP level classes and stuff like that, you're not texting during class. You're holding on for dear life because, good God, will you do anything for that A?
Now, is that a function of the kids who are, I mean, kids are a little bit more committed to academics if they're in AP classes, or is it a function of the teachers having higher expectations and sort of riding them?
It's definitely both. It's definitely both. All teachers will tell you, you know, don't have your cell phone out. It's a sign of respect. I'm here to teach you. You're here to learn. But as you, like, progress up in your education, like, you're paying for a service at some point. Why would you throw your money away when you can sit out on a bench in the hallway and text during the exact same allotment of time if you're not going to be paying attention?
One of the things I've heard is that teachers see it and know it and just don't want to pick that battle.
And that's what I was almost going to say, is that some teachers, there's just so many people texting. I mean, if it says 64%, you know, take their phones to school and text during the day, I think that a teacher could spend a good portion of that period confiscating, you know, phones, making sure they got to the right place, and dealing with the outcomes and the consequences. So a lot of them do turn a blind eye, and as long as kids are keeping up with the lecture or paying attention somewhat, they kind of let it go in certain classes. Then you have the teachers that really do follow the rule to the letter and confiscate phones when they see them. So
now the teachers who, they probably set that up pretty early in the year and have, you know, that expectation is there and reinforce it consistently. That's the information that I've gotten back from the research and the reading I've done, is that schools that do better with this problem are the ones mm-hmm. that have a uniform policy that they introduce to the parents and all the school counselors and all the teachers, and they say, we will enforce this rigorously, so that parents know ahead of time, you know, that their kids' phones are going to be snatched. And, you know, it's not like the old flip phone, Nokia, with, you know, it was $35. These are small computers.
One of the challenges in reading articles, though, is that cell phones are a powerful tool. It's only been the past couple of years they have like a computer at the palm of their hands. And so some teachers actually use the cell phones as a resource in class. It's just hard to keep students on task.
That's one of the pros that was mentioned a lot, is that there is new information. It's a new way to, you know, the tablets are now, it's not just cell phones. Now it's tablets are also coming into the schools, and they're getting utilized for in-school instruction. I mean, there's good things to access to information. So it's not all bad. What do you guys see as both school counselors, student, nurse, the issues that are the most significant problems? I mean, texting in class is a distraction. Kids might not be they're obviously not paying as much attention, although I have sat in my office and watched a kid text and have a conversation with me at the same time, quite intelligently. Like, it's like their brains can sort of separate into two different areas. But what are you guys, the biggest concerns at your staff meetings or parents calling in, anything?
I'll go ahead with that as the nurse. Like I said earlier, one of the problems I think that's really affecting kids is these cell phones are attached to the hip, and they sleep with them, and they don't get a full night's rest because they're texting late into the night, through the night. They get woken up during deep sleep, and we already have a problem with kids having trouble staying awake, coming to school awake, and not sleeping through first hour. And I think that's one of the biggest problems with them not getting a lot of rest, at least on a personal, healthy level.
And with that, comes just the magnitude of information at all hours of the day, just streaming in via, you know, Twitter, texting, Facebook, Instagram. It's just the amount of information that is out there for them to get hooked into. It's pretty mind-boggling.
Kelsey, what do you think the top problem is with cell phones in the schools?
It kills social skills. I really feel like cell phones are a huge social skill killer. Like, you cannot find a single person waiting for 5 minutes without having to, like, pull out their phone to text somebody, because I don't want to be that one person just standing there. You know, a lot of the face-to-face interactions or conversations that would be had over the phone, just calling to say, hi, my name is Kelsey. I was wondering if I could call and speak with your son or your daughter so-and-so. Kids no longer have to do that. So it's creating a larger divide between, like, the parents knowing who their kids' friends are and what's going on with them in their lives, because they'll have mm-hmm. that, like, two-second interaction. Are they respectful? Do they know how to address an adult? Do they know how to ask to speak with my child? You know, because a kid can just text them or, like, call them on their own cell phone and be like, hey, what's going on? What are we up to later? Did your parents know that we're going out?
Yeah, it's I read the Nielsen report did some research on cell phone use, and it said that the average high school student sends 3,339 texts a month. That is that's a tremendous amount. That's like, I think they broke it down to 6 texts every waking hour that a child has, and some, that's an average. So sometimes the females are about 4,000 texts a month. That is, are they talking to anybody?
They're talking to everybody.
Talking to everybody.
They're talking to everybody. I've seen kids. There was a girl in my class one time, and she was pretending to read a book, but really she was texting. And one of our math teachers walked in, and she was like, phone. And it was funny because the person she was texting was her mother.
Yeah.
And so she was like, Mom, come pick up my phone at the end of the day. I just got caught talking to you.
So, Sarah, tell them your story.
I have a student who is taking an AP test, and his mom had texted him, I'm not even sure what, and he was responding to his mother's text during the test, and he got his test taken away because he was texting during class, and I just think it's pretty funny that he was answering his mother. Yep.
Do parents not know where their children are?
Parents, parents are aware, but I sometimes feel as if they feel as if they're above the rules. Like, it's my child. I should be free to contact them whenever I choose. But you also have to understand, parents, you are being a disruption.
You are being a disruption. That's good advice to parents. For those of you who might be tuning in late, my guests today are Anchorage High School Counselor Sarah Miller, High School Nurse Luann Fogles, and East High School Senior Kelsey Hernandez. We are discussing the social and emotional health of Anchorage High School kids. I want to remind our listeners you can reach us with your questions and comments in three ways. The local phone number is 550-8433. You can call toll-free from anywhere you might be listening, 1-888-353-5752. The last way to participate is by emailing your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. I also want to encourage folks to give us feedback about a show or to suggest topics for our monthly mental health program. If you're out there listening and you have a question about cell phones or sexting or cyberbullying or any drug abuse in the school districts, now is the time to call in and ask us your question, and hopefully we'll get an intelligent answer to you, or we'll point you in a direction that can get you there. All right, so cell phones. What are parents saying when they call in? Are parents concerned about this, or they just want their kids to have their phones so they can get in touch with them?
Both, basically. They want that electronic leash, I think, at all times to be able to contact them. But at the same time, and sometimes they get upset when their phones have been taken away because that is their link to their child. But at the same time, they can be supportive and I think use it as a consequence for their kids' grades and privileges. I think so.
How can parents support the policy that the school district has set up? How can we, I got three kids that are going to go to high school soon, and I'm going to have to figure out what to do about the hologram cell phone that's going to exist in another.
Well, don't text your kids during the school day, or at least during class time. I think that's a big one.
That's for starters.
I think if they parents realize that the cell phone is for emergencies only rather than just everyday texting for Johnny to do something here or there, they need to look at it like an emergency situation, because before we had cell phones, they had to go through the front office to get their kids a message. In the nurse's office, I will say that it happens more times than I can account for, where kids have just texted their parents to come pick them up because they're sick for one reason or another. I have no clue what's going on with that kid. I've not done an assessment. The kid either just goes home with parents, or they come to my office saying, my mom's picking me up because I'm sick and I just need a blue pass. And I just don't write a blue pass. I need to do some sort of an assessment, make sure the kid is okay, what's going on. But it happens more time than I would think. And I fear for some of the kids that just go home and I haven't had a chance to talk to them and try to figure out if it's something I need to do a referral for, whether there's a health issue that maybe the parents need to take this a little bit further than just taking their kid home and let him rest.
Right. Okay, so school district policy, no cell phones except in emergencies. Parents can support the school district by explaining this to their kids, letting them know there'll be consequences and supporting the school district taking the cell phone. I've had parents come in my office pissed. Really angry that their kid's cell phone got taken, and angry at the school district. It's not fair. And I can't imagine ever, defending my kid against a teacher unless it was quite an extreme event. Kelsey, any ideas on how parents should wrangle you guys in and
I just feel like parents need to have a sense of respect for their teacher, just as the parent has a sense of respect for, like, how you choose to parent your child is your decision. But while they're at school, they need to comply with the school rules. I mean, if I was a parent and a teacher took away my child's cell phone, I'd be like, were they texting class? Yep, well, that's not what they're there for. I sent you to school to learn, and you're not learning by texting. So I would just caution people to remember, like, when you send your child to do something, like, you sent them there for a reason. If you just wanted them to sit around and text, well, then you might as well not enforce the fact that they go to school. Otherwise, why bother enforcing it?
I think we need to remind kids that I think cell phones is having a cell phone is a privilege, not a right. You know, that it can be taken away with bad behavior. You have to have the maturity to know when you can or can't use the phone.
I'm glad you mentioned that privilege, not a right thing. I had I found a great website just yesterday, so it's not on the website, but I will add it to there. I think we have the technology to add it afterwards, but it's Cell Phone Sanity for Parents, if you just Google that. Mm-hmm. And it's I'll get the link on there, but it's sitegoogle.com Parent Teen Cell Phone Agreement. And it's just a psychologist put this up in order to assist parents with dealing with these cell phone questions. And one thing that they said, the most important information in that website was, don't buy your kids a cell phone for their birthday and give them a $500 phone and say, here you go, because then the kids are entitled to it. It's theirs. I can do what I want with it. And I hear that all the time. Parents are like, well, they won't give me their cell phone, or they have a code on it. And I say, really? Like, how is that possible that your child would have a code on there that you don't have access to? And they say, well, it's their cell phone. So that's one of the things that, and this website has a contract, and they suggest you sort of treat a cell phone like a car.
And that's what I was just going to say. We have parents coming in, kids are failing, they just don't focus on school. They're always on their phones or streaming or online of some sort. And they keep saying, well, I keep threatening to take his phone away if he doesn't get his grades up. Well, but I think the phone needs to go away, and then the kid will get their grades up because they want that phone back. So I think it's a little bit backwards.
I had a family that had a electronics sort of docking station in their house, and everybody in the family would come in and put their cell phones and tablets and whatever on that at like 9 o'clock at night. There was a blackout time for all media stuff, and the parents did it too. They modeled that behavior. So one of the things that I've heard is, don't be telling your kid get off the cell phone while you're sitting there texting and playing Angry Birds or whatever it is that you're doing. So modeling that behavior, having clear expectations, and that there's a lot of stuff on the internet that is not good for young minds. And I guess that's one of the next things that this leads to, is the thing that terrifies me perhaps the most is this sexting and sending of lewd, partially clothed or all the way not clothed images via the internet. What's the prevalence of that in Anchorage among teenagers?
I personally do not see it a lot. I feel like it has to do a lot with who you associate and like how like firm-handed your parents were when you were younger. I feel like that plays a huge role in it. But I do know that once an image is out there, it's out there forever. There was an incident at another high school where some naked photos were taken of a girl, and within the course of like that evening, within to the next day, the entirety of her student body had it, and almost half, if not more, of the student body at East had heard about it, had seen it, or otherwise. And allowing that to happen or doing it yourself, you are opening yourself to be subjected to nasty comments, you know, and that's not something that's going to go away. People are going to be like, oh, yeah, I heard about her, I heard about him, I know what they did.
I try to tell kids who come in after something like that might have happened to them and say, you know, next time you're going to post something, a picture, a comment, pretend you're posting your mom or dad and see if you'd still send that picture or that text out, because so many people regret what they put out there, because once it's out there, it's out there for anyone to comment on a lot of the time.
This is Luann. I sometimes feel like I don't think the kids see the significance of some of these pictures. It seems like society has gone way far to the other side of the pendulum instead of being, you know, wearing more clothing to cover us and having some of the more sensitive areas be for private. They're out and about for anyone to see, even in the school day. We're always fighting with clothing and issues with the dress code. And it seems like it's just more accepted to do that sort of thing.
And accessible, really. I mean, you can just Google so many different things. And mm-hmm. I mean, the images, everything is just out there for everybody to see at all times, it seems like.
Yeah, I think as a society, we've become quite accustomed to nudity. And, you know, these kids are not engaging in child pornography. But the reality mm-hmm. is that some of these folks, some of these younger adults, maybe they're 17 going into 18 and they have girlfriends or, you know, significant others that are 16, 17, and they're doing that, and it runs, it's a significant risk. I just wanted to read a little bit from an FBI report done in July of 2010 that said, juvenile sexting is increasing in frequency. A recent study found that 20% of teenagers, that's 22% of girls and 18% of boys, sent naked or semi-nude images of themselves or posted them online. Another survey indicated that nearly 1 in 6 teens between the ages of 12 and 17 who own cell phones have received naked or nearly nude pictures via text message from someone they know. That is, that's a big number. The numbers that I read were from various sites. One was from the Pew Institute for Internet Research. The other was the FBI report. They all kind of, there's some variations, but really it's between 15 and 22-23% of kids that are actually engaging in that behavior. That worries me.
I think sometimes with the younger girls, I mean, Kelsey, you're an exceptional student, but sometimes with the younger girls who may not be so aware of what can happen to those pictures, they might be coerced and convinced by their sweetheart at the time that this is someone that loves them and cares about them and will never do anything to hurt them. And they ask for those pictures, and the girl or boy sends those pictures thinking that this is never going to go anywhere. And then they break up.
No, that's something to definitely be concerned about. And I don't necessarily feel like they're unaware, because we've all heard stories like there are all these anti-bullying programs, you know, mm-hmm. they're enforced in schools and set out there. And cyberbullying is a very, very large portion of that, because more of our world is moving into the technological age. You know, there aren't places where you can walk in and say, I'd like a job application anymore. They're like, oh, it's online. Just go to our website and print it out mm-hmm. kind of deal. So I don't think necessarily it's so much that they're unaware of what could happen. It's the feeling of, oh, that will never happen to me.
Oh.
All mm-hmm. right. We are up against the break, so want to let you know you're listening to Line One, your health connection. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. KSKA is a member-supported radio. KSKA Spring Membership Drive is this week. Programming relies upon your financial support. Here's Dr. Thad Woodard to tell you more.
Hello, I'm Dr. Thad Woodard, host of Line One, your health connection, keeping you connected to Alaska and the world. KSKA and Line One thank you for supporting what matters to you by maintaining your membership to KSKA. KSKA is listener-supported radio. Call right now, 550-8484, and pledge your financial support to keep KSKA's local news and information programs going strong on FM 91.1. Toll-free, the number is 800-478-5256. KSKA's locally produced call-in programs are a great public resource that keep you connected with our community. Each week, my colleagues keep you in touch with experts and guests that offer insight and information on the issues that matter to you. Call in and pledge your support. in Anchorage, 550-8484, or toll-free 1-800-478-5256. KSKA and you, we all work together to provide the best news and information public service on radio today. We appreciate your support for KSKA, and thank you.
Welcome back to Line 1, Your Health Connection from KSKA Anchorage. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. If you're just joining us, I have in studio high school nurse Luann Fogles, high school counselor Sarah Miller, and East High senior Kelsey Hernandez. Today, we are discussing problems kids face in local high schools. You can email questions to line1 at alaskapublic.org, call locally at 550-8433, or toll free at 1-888-353-5752. Please remember, if you are listening between 7 and 8 p.m. on Monday evening, you'll be hearing a taped recording. All right, welcome back. Email from somebody, that a listener, that says, are cell phones increasing or worsening the bullying problems in schools?
Absolutely. This is Luann. We've had, over the past several years, seen more of that. In fact, we've had that we have even been aware of. I don't think we're aware of the problem a lot of the times. But we've seen a great increase, and we've seen kids having problems with things being said, whether they think it's a drama sort of issue that's going back and forth. There's a fine line, and sometimes those things get forwarded. Sometimes on Facebook, we have had kids bring in pages of ugly, ugly comments about kids. Sarah, help out. I know you've seen it.
Yeah, and what used to be, you know, you wrote something on the bathroom wall, or you told your four friends or 10 close friends about this other person. Now, you know, people post something on Twitter, you know, they subtweet things, and that gets to 500 followers who then can retweet and send it out to their friends. And I mean, it spreads like wildfire. So it's not just person-to-person conflict or bullying anymore. It is mass communication.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely, it's how many people can see it, how many people will know that I think this about this one person, and who's going to take my side. And that's a big, big part of it, is who's gonna pick who over who, and how is that gonna play out. And before, you know, like, there was like the spreading of it, like, it took a while, like, you get in a fight with somebody, then someone tells somebody, then somebody tells somebody else, you know, and it would take a while, but it's instantaneous now. Something could happen in a classroom on one side of school, and I could find out about it while it's going on, 2 seconds after it's going on, or 3 seconds before it even started. Some kids be like, man, I think these other guys are going to get into a fight. It's going to happen.
All right. We have a caller on line 4. Grant, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm all right. What can I do for you?
I was calling in to kind of just talk about the cyberbullying and some of my own experiences with it.
And this is Grant from, used to be from Anchorage, is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, they asked me where I was calling from, so I mean, I'm calling from Arizona, but I'm still from Anchorage.
You grew up here?
Yeah, I grew up there, yeah.
And graduated how long ago?
I graduated 2 years ago this May, so I graduated in 2011.
Okay, so you're pretty fresh out.
Yeah.
So what do you remember about cyberbullying and sexting and some of these things that we've been talking about today?
Well, I don't remember anything about sexting because that's not really where I was at in high school, but I remember quite clearly in my junior year of high school, this guy, I took his ex-girlfriend to junior prom, and he was, like, really upset about it. And he got my number from her and was just, he was, like, harassing me and stuff like that. But, you know, when I'd see him in person, he wouldn't say anything to me, which at the time I didn't think was, like, I didn't really think that was a big deal. But then, you know, I'm majoring in psychology here at NAU, and I've learned a lot in social psychology about why that is. And I think that a big problem with cyberbullying is that it takes away people's individual identities in this, and they're always saying, oh, well, you know, it's, you know, this is a text or this is from Facebook, you know, it's not a big deal. But as you guys are saying, you know, we enter into this technological age and everything is more, you know, accessible because you do have Facebook or Twitter or Instagram and all that stuff. It's more accessible and more people can find out about it. And, you know, I'm an RA at NAU, and sometimes we get these cases, people will come to me and they'll have, you know, like just pages of these messages from someone, you know, and sometimes it's even their roommate who's just, it's a real form of bullying. I don't think that people really see it that way, or at least they didn't see it that way like when I was in high school. But I think it's a big deal. It's becoming an even bigger deal as we, you know, as everybody, you know, these 13-year-old kids are walking around with the iPhone 5, you know, and they're all on Facebook and Twitter and stuff like that. And I think a lot of the cyberbullying comes from possibly a lack of education of the consequences. I mean, and the consequences is like, you know, if you're bullying somebody in real life, it's the same type of thing.
Absolutely, Grant. Those are some really good points. Well, I have you on the line. Just a question for you is, what do you remember about drugs in schools as far as the frequency of kids using drugs, any forms of drugs in the schools, like during the day?
I remember there were a lot of people that I knew who, you know, if they were texting in class, like there were some kids who all they'd be texting was like someone was trying to pick up like a bag of weed or something like that. And then, you know, people would go out and do it at lunch and come back. I mean, it was frequent. It wasn't for me because I would have, you know, been too paranoid to come back to the school if I'd been doing it. But it is like it's at least it. And I went to service. It was kind of prevalent. You know, it didn't really matter who you were. It was kind of just like, you know, oh, you want to go out onto the trails and smoke weed during lunch, or yeah, sure, let's go do it. And it was accessible too. I mean, there was one of my teachers put to us one day in class that at Service High School at that time, if you really, really wanted to find like heroin, if you wanted to get a bag of heroin, like you could start searching at 7:30 in the morning, and by 2 p.m. you could probably get your hands on a bag of heroin, or at least find someone who knew where to get it. So that was kind of scary because I'd never really thought much about the hard drugs that go through high schools, but there are, I guess there are. There weren't really like, I mean, I never was looking for hard drugs or anything like that, but it doesn't really matter. It just kind of opened my eyes to, wow, this is accessible and there are people who know where to find this stuff, which at the time was like amazing because I never thought a high school student would know where to get heroin. I thought that was like, you know, some kind of big deal. You'd have to be an adult or something like that. But the fact of the matter was that it was anybody. It could have been, you know, people in your class that you know. They could have the connections. So that's kind of what I remember of at least the accessibility and the usage. I don't remember anybody being on heroin at school, but I knew that you could find it if you wanted to.
All right. How's college going for you, Grant?
I mean, it's going well. 3 more weeks, and then I'll be home for the summer. So I really can't wait. Yeah.
Then you're flying back home.
It's been a good experience so far.
Okay, good. Well, I appreciate the call, and keep in touch.
Yeah, I definitely will. Thanks for having me on.
All right, take care. All right, that's interesting. Any comments on...
Well, I thought it was interesting about the education about cyberbullying. I think when I was doing some research and just asking kids in school how much bullying goes on, you know, with texting and online and on your phone, and all of them said not much, but then they would say how there's so much drama going on. So I asked them to explain what the drama was. And it really is that is harassment, is the drama that's, you know, being tweeted out there. But they don't consider that harassment, which I found fairly interesting. But really, it's anything that makes a student, you know, feel bad about themselves, not want to come to school, have any adverse effect. And when you're tweeting out things that might be drama, but it could cause a lot of, I mean, that could be bullying to some person.
A lot of times, probably that start online, someone will make a comment about the way something was like looking or how someone was dressed or what they were wearing. And I feel like it's because people have this sense of like bravery that, you know, you're hidden behind this screen, you're sending this message, but you're not saying it straight to someone's face. Some of the things I've read before, I'm like, oh man, I cannot even imagine what would have happened had that been a face-to-face interaction, nor who would be standing after it occurred. But with that screen, like, in front of you, and you can send it out there and everyone will see it, you know, but you didn't say it straight to their face. You didn't have to be confrontational about it. It's all really very passive-aggressive for the most part, because there's nothing that they can do if they're not in the same space as you. They can't be like, what's your problem? What is going on? Because that person can choose to respond to you or not respond to you.
What is the school district policy on bullying?
Zero tolerance policy. They have a zero tolerance policy for bullying because a while ago a kid committed suicide and the parents sued the school district up the yin yang because they knew that the bullying was occurring. They did nothing to stop it.
And I'm glad you said that because a lot of the time, especially with cyberbullying, if it's not brought to the school's attention, we don't find out. So a lot of parents, I had a parent once come in and said that she was very angry because her student had been bullied for a year, and it was all electronically. And we just encourage parents that if they know about that, to please let the school know so that we can intervene and help educate and definitely put a stop to it.
That's what I meant when I said earlier that a lot of times it's underreported. And kids don't tell their parents a lot of times till after it's gotten to be so bad that it's really affecting them in areas of their life. And then they might share with their parents or come in and tell us. And we can't help them unless we do something. Unless they let us know. But just the word bullying, we will do something about it. We will document. And, you know, the school nurses, the counselors, the school psychologists all work really close together. They all come together with different educational backgrounds and different ideas, and they make a great team to be able to help kids in all aspects and families. So I think we just have to be, told about it. If we're not told about it, we can't do anything.
That's an interesting point because one of the Pew Internet research studies showed that only 1 of 10 victims of cyberbullying tells parents or teachers about the incident, and only 1 in 4 is reported to law enforcement. So I think it's happening a lot more than people think it's out there, and that's. That's a cause of big concern. Bullying, as Kelsey pointed out, has resulted in kids feeling suicidal and in some cases taking their own lives because they just couldn't deal with what was happening. Kelsey also made a really good point, the anonymity of the bullying. It's like shooting somebody with a gun versus hand-to-hand kind of combat. It's a lot harder to say something to somebody's face than just to put it out there onto the airwaves. What should parents do? Because I hear this a lot. The parents come into my office, little Johnny's getting bullied, and we told the teacher and we told the school and they can't do anything about it. What should parents do if they're concerned about their child being bullied, either in elementary, middle, or high school?
Well, at South, if we're told about it, we follow through with talking to both the kids, the parents, on both sides. And generally, once it's documented and we know that there's something that's happened, it's in the record. And the student who's actually doing the bullying will get told by our administration that if this happens again, there will be more severe, harsh consequences. But, you know, there's always more than two sides to the story. So it's really hard to kind of sometimes shake all the true information out. But I think in most cases, it's like South is, where we're not going to tolerate it.
Sarah, do you have any recent experience with bullying or something that came up that caused concern or what you guys, how you addressed it? Obviously without details, but.
Yeah, I mean, it seems very common that a student will come in upset about some, you know, being bullied and we'll get to the, you know, we'll investigate a little bit. But it's that thing that Kelsey said. It's kind of people feel like they can have a little bit more bravado when you're not face to face with somebody. And then it's kind of the he said, she said, well, so and so said this about me, so I said this about them. But we do have the zero tolerance, and each, you know, student in that case gets a warning and to cease and desist that kind of behavior. The interesting thing, in the past couple of years, the mediation or those kinds of situations have come about from, you know, texting or online bullying. There's been very little where you talk to kids that have been called a name by someone directly. It is all online. And I ask the kids when they first come in, have you spoken to this person in person? Have you had a conversation with them about this stuff? And they all say no. It is all via text, Facebook, electronic sources. And so my first suggestion is always that, you know, once we work through the stuff, that they should, you know, have a communication with the person in face-to-face, which seems so out of place for them.
Yeah. Would you bring in both sets of parents and sit down with them, or do you just make phone calls, or how is that approached?
I think it depends on the severity of the situation and the situation. They'd never be talked to at the same time, I wouldn't think. I mean, different times. But you would definitely want to, because some parents need education on what's happening and what their student is doing on both sides of the story. But I think communication is key on both sides. But again, depending on the severity of the situation, bring parents in.
Okay, I want to remind listeners that you can reach us with your questions or comments in three ways. The local phone number, 550-8433. You can call toll-free from anywhere you might be listening, 1-888-353-5752. The last way to participate is by emailing your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. Okay, so shifting gears from cell phones, since we did almost the whole show on cell phones, something that I wanted to touch base on with the counselors and with all three of you, frankly, is the nurse, you probably see a lot of this, is a lot of parents are really freaked out about cutting. And that's one of the things that I just wanted to address. What is cutting? How often are you seeing it? And if you do see it, what are the steps that the school district takes to let parents know and to reach out and get these kids some help?
Cutting comes to us in different ways. Sometimes, very rarely does the student come themselves, very rarely. We hear about it either from a teacher that might have seen Johnny's arm or fellow students who come and say they're concerned about their friend. Sometimes we'll even have a parent call and say their child talked to them about their friend. So then the next step is for, in all cases it's South, and I think this is across the district pretty much, where two people get together and talk to the student, and it's generally the nurse and the counselor and or the school psychologist, and try to find out, you know, what is going on, what is precipitating them to go to this behavior. Always, always starting with we're not shocked by it. We want to help the student. We understand more now than we did years ago about cutting and what it means. Always finding out whether it might be a suicidal kind of event, but following up with parents, always calling parents. As the nurse, I'm making sure that if they're fresh cuts, that they know how to take care of them, not get infected, that sort of thing. Ask about when and how they do it and with what. So we kind of have a good idea the severity that it might be if they continue, because it's really hard for kids to stop when they start. And that's part of having the counselor be on board to help with further counseling. Sarah, you want to say more?
Yeah, just that I think the research has showed that a lot of the time it is a call for help. They just need help coping with something. And then we definitely talk with the parents and work with them to refer out to counselors in the community to get help in coping with stress or whatever is causing them to cut or self-harm. And I think it's a joint team effort with that.
And do you guys... I mean, you kind of triage them there, and then you'll make referrals out into the community as appropriate. All right. Kelsey, thoughts on cutting? What kind of stuff are you seeing kids cutting over? Or
I saw this as being a lot more prevalent in middle school is when I saw this, that really big transition from going to being a large fish in a small pond in elementary school where you know everybody, you've been the same place for 6 years, to a place where you generally know absolutely no one. And like that huge transition, that's when I see that more, that's when I saw that more than what I do now in high school. And I feel like at this point, like when they are doing it in high school, usually they're either very meticulous about it, like they know how, what, where, why, like they've thought the process through. It's not something they've just started.
Do you see a lot of kids doing it for attention, or is it, or you mentioned sophisticated, like the stomach or the thighs where it won't be seen?
I think just as people have progress in life and as they get older, they become more aware of their surroundings and who sees them and what effects that their actions have on other people. So I think that that changes like their pattern of behavior. Like they're still doing something that in some way satisfies them or helps release something that they feel needs to be released, but will have less of an effect on other people because they won't be as aware of what's going on with them themselves.
Okay. Cutting's relatively, I mean, how long have you guys been seeing it show up in the school district?
We actually saw quite a bit of it when South first opened. It was like a tsunami, it seemed like. We were seeing it all the time, and then it really did subside for quite some time. For several years, we hardly saw it. It seems to be coming back with a little more force right now. But one thing I do want to really caution parents is that if a kid is cutting, it's not necessarily suicidal. Most time, it's not suicidal. And I want to caution parents to realize that most times when what we've learned over the years and what we learn from students is that the kids are doing it because they need to cope with something else in their lives that's difficult. And there's many different reasons, but many times it's a release for the kids when they cut to feel better. And we just want to help them learn ways of better coping. And we want to help them learn ways that they don't have to do this to feel better. And so that's why it's so important for parents to be more understanding of the fact that we just need to move forward with helping the student.
All right. We are out of time. We're up against it. So I want to thank my guests for coming. Today's guest, South High School nurse Leanne Fogles, school counselor Sarah Miller, East High School senior Kelsey Hernandez. If you would like to continue today's conversation, join KSKA. On Facebook. You can find the link on our website, alaskapublic.org. You can let us know your thoughts about today's show at our email address, line1@alaskapublic.org. Why not tune into your health next week, April 29th, when Dr. Woodard will be discussing childhood trauma with national expert Dr. Joy Osofsky of the Louisiana State University Health Science Center and Shirley Pitts of State of Alaska. Pat Yak is president of public media. Kristen Speck is our web editor and audio engineer for today's show. Thanks for listening. I'm Prentice Pemberton. Have a great day.
Line 1, Your Health Connection is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.